It's Sunday, the 27th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Henry Sims and Shane Whittington. Monster Show brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Trey311. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like Trey311, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can sponsor the podcast for a day. Thank you, Trey, and thank you to everyone who has done that so far this season. Of course, Moneyball.com.au is Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. So if you're living in Australia or if you're living in New Zealand, make sure you're checking out Moneyball and getting involved in all the DFS contests. You can obviously find this podcast on iTunes and anywhere else you find podcasts. You can also watch it on YouTube and you can watch it live on YouTube. So if you are watching live on YouTube and have any questions, comments, additions to the show, tweet at me at redrock_bball. You can see that handle below my face on the screen at the moment. And while you can interact live as the show is going ahead, we've got a lot of stuff to get to today. We're going to be reviewing the 10 games on Saturday. We'll be previewing Sunday's smaller slate of games. What I'll also be doing is, for you guys in head-to-head leagues, looking at ways that you can win certain categories this week on Sunday. So who's going to be the best options to try and swing a certain category for you as you head in and try and get yourself into the next round of the playoffs, or perhaps win the championship, which with a few leagues finishing off this week. I know that the Red Rock Dynasty League finishes off tomorrow. Good luck again to Matt and Mark in that one. So make sure you stay tuned for that portion of the show.
Let's get to it.
No one on Instagram or Facebook got it right today. We're looking at Aaron Gordon on Instagram. How many combined points, rebounds, and steals? The total was 16. No one. On Facebook, we're going with the other dunk contest finalist, Zach LaVine. Points, assists, and steals. And he had 11. Not a good night from LaVine. And no one got that one right as well. So let's double down and go back for Sunday. On Instagram, we're looking at DJ Augustin. Combined points, assists, and steals. And on Facebook, we're looking at Klay Thompson. Combined points, rebounds, and blocks. Let's get stuck into the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to Paul Millsap of the Atlanta Hawks. Millsap only played 29 minutes because this line could have been bigger. He suffered a cut on his forehead, and that caused him to leave the game and not return. But in 29 minutes, he did a massive amount of damage. He almost had a quadruple triple one. 23 points, 3 threes, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 4 blocks, and with great percentages, 8 of 14 from the field, and went 4 of 5 from the line. And if you care about turnovers, he had none of those as well. So Millsap, that is an absolutely superb line. Now, for big portions of this season, he started off inside the top 10. He's dropped slightly, but he's ranked 16th on the season. Very hard to complain about that. And over the last month, he is averaging 2 steals a game and 2 blocks a game, along with 16 points and 9 rebounds, 3.5 assists. He's just below the triple one mark for the year. He's at 0.9 threes and 1.8 steals and 1.5 blocks. But Millsap is a guy that you probably could have got outside the top 20. Not sure why he always falls in that range, considering he's 16th this year. He was 16th last year. He was 19th the year before that. You know, 3 consecutive top 20 finishes from Paul Millsap, but you're always able to find him outside that top 20 range in most cases anyway. And he just does so much of everything. And in a roto league, he is extraordinarily valuable because he's doing everything, literally every single category he's contributing in. He's not hurting you anywhere. He's providing massive steal numbers as a forward, as a power forward eligible player. Great block numbers, just doing absolutely everything. Paul Millsap is one of my favorite fantasy players, one of my favorite NBA players. And despite that slight drop off in the second half of the season, he's still been absolutely amazing, as we saw in today's performance. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Johnny Henson of the Milwaukee Bucks. He played 25 minutes and went 19-8 with a steal and 3 blocks. That's huge. He went 8 of 10 from the field. He hit all 3 of his free throws. And I feel like ever since this podcast started, I've been looking at Henson and going, he needs 25 minutes. Give him 25 minutes and he's going to be able to put up big numbers. But Larry Drew hated him. He's a terrible coach, but Jason Kidd came in and hated him as well. And there were times last year when Milwaukee literally had no centers on the roster, like no one, and Henson would play 22 minutes. And that to me was a sign, well, you know what, Kidd doesn't like this guy, doesn't trust him. We saw through the start of this season, no trust at all in him either. He would refuse to get 20 minutes. But in two of the last three games, Henson has played 25 minutes. And he's looked bloody good while doing it. And we know that he is a defensive shot changer. He's a shot blocker. His scoring has improved as well. His ability to block shots already was something you could own on a sporadic basis in a fantasy league. But if he's going to play 25 minutes a night, then he's going to be useful. And I think you have to look at him. He is a top 90 player over the last 2 months. Yes, it's only eight games, and it all comes from his 2.4 blocks and 61% from the field. But if we're seeing him play these extra minutes and get to 25 minutes a night, then he's going to be an absolute must-own guy. And do you take a risk? Maybe. You might take that risk on him. You might get something out of him. It all depends, of course, as with everything, who you're going to drop. But things are trending in the right direction for John Henson, and trends at this time of the year are super important in trying to determine what happens with your team. Now, the problem with the Bucks for next week is they only play three games, and they play them on Wednesday, they play them on Friday, and they play them on Sunday. So Wednesday and Friday, two busy days, although the games are pretty well spread out next week. Tuesday and Thursday a little bit lighter on. But you're waiting until Wednesday until he plays. So we're talking 3 days without any games. So adding Henson now, yes, it might work out well for you, but you're missing 3 days worth of games. You've got two teams who play five games next week. You've got, how many? You've got three teams who play back-to-back Monday, Tuesday, the Bulls, the Nets, and the Thunder. You're better off using a waiver wire spot to get value that way rather than in getting someone who might be good, but you've got to wait 3 days next week to get him active. And that's something you really do need to pay attention to at this point in the season. The young gun of the night is Lord Alfred Payton of the Orlando Magic. He started again. He played 30 minutes and went 15 points. He had 3 rebounds, 10 assists, and 2 blocks, and went 7 of 9 from the field and 1 of 1 from the free throw line. The percentages have always been a concern with him, but he's actually shooting over the last month 51% from the field. He's shooting 42% from the free throw line, so that's a concern, but it is only on 1.8 attempts, so it's not completely unrecoverable from. We have to remember that in college, Payton shot, now I don't have the number on the top of my head, but it was 50% from the field, because all he did was he didn't take many jumpers. He did a lot of driving and pushing for dunks and for layups. And it's harder to do that, obviously, in the NBA. But if he realizes, and this is something that we need to understand with a lot of players, if they understand what their weaknesses are and what their strengths are, and they play to them, then it makes them a lot better. There are players who don't understand what they're not good at, and they continually try to do it, and that leads to problems. But if Peyton's learning what shots he can take, what shots he can't take, where he's best dealing with it, then that's going to improve his field goal percentage. His last 2 months, he's at 47%, and that's obviously not a concern as a point guard. The free throws is. There's no escaping that. He's bad at that. But adding him off the wire, which he might be available, you're going to get big assist numbers. His steals should be there. You're going to get above average rebounding for a point guard. Just don't expect much in the scoring stakes. Don't expect threes. And hope you can deal with the free throws. So he is he's a must-own to a degree. If it fits your team, sure. If it doesn't, he could do more harm than good. So you really do need to pay attention to that. The Magic for next week have got a pretty decent schedule. They play four games. They've got the Nets on a Tuesday. They've got the Pacers on a Thursday. They've got the Bucks on a Friday and the Grizzlies on a Sunday. So actually, they've got a brilliant schedule. Four games, including Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, is pretty significant. So that's obviously nice to see. One of the better schedules of the week. The dud of the night. Same game, different team. The Chicago Bulls, Nikola Mirotic, who played only 20 minutes. He hit one of his 7 shots. He had 4 points with 4 rebounds and a triple. The Bulls are legitimately atrocious at the moment. There are so many problems with the Bulls. Mirotic is one of them. I think I've said it plenty of times, the way that Mirotic has been used is a big problem as well. He hasn't been great, but he's been a bloody lot better than what he's been allowed to show. And even despite all his struggles this year, Mirotic is still ranked inside the top 120 for the year, despite everything that's gone wrong with him this year. He's still averaging 0.8 steals, 0.7 blocks, and 1.8 triples a game. He's still getting 5.6 rebounds a game. He's shooting 79 from the line. There's a lot. There is a lot to like about what Mirotić can do. And it's just a real pain that he's not getting as big an opportunity. And his shot isn't that much worse than last year. He was at 40.5% last year. He's at 39.1% this year. So it's a percent drop, and that's not great. But he's shooting 37 from three. And I don't know, he's just not being used correctly. And you could say that about basically the whole roster. It's been a complete shambles, the Bulls. And when we get into that game later, you'll just see how bad things actually are in Chicago. But Mirotić, the Bulls have five games. That's the only way that you hold on to him at this point, because he should be, he should be getting 26, 28 minutes a night. And for five games, that's beautiful. And he could put up tremendous numbers. But Højbjerg doesn't seem to do that with him. And you can't say that not doing it is working, because it's not. And I know a lot of people think that he's just garbage. I completely disagree with that. He needs to be playing more. And I think that if you've held him now, unless you're just, you know what, I need to get a game in tomorrow, you could consider dropping him. But that five-game week next week is going to be pretty important for him, I think. Pretty important. And hopefully you get three big games out of him, which justifies the holding on. We'll see. The Bulls need to do something, and maybe that works. Zubin Petrao is watching live, and he's tweeting in. Do you think the Magic will fire Skiles in the offseason? I don't. I think they should, but I don't think they will. And he also says that Højbjerg misused Mirotić more than Tibbs, and he should be fired too. I don't think he will be fired, but he has misused him dreadfully. Thibodeau sort of misused him, but he was a rookie. And then when he came on towards the end of the year, that was fine. There was guys ahead of him who were better. But at the moment, he needs to be used way more than he's currently being used. So thank you for the contributions there, Zubin. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup from Saturday. That's the wrong graphic. There we go. Point guard Rick Rubio, 44 points. He is having a tremendous month at the moment, as the Wolves are, but he has been fantastic. Ish Smith at 46.3, a massive game, including a huge amount of rebounds for a point guard. Shooting guards, CJ McCollum at 44.9. He took on the Sixers, so that was one that we really targeted yesterday. And Courtney Lee with a 26.3. So that works out for his sub 4,000 salary. It's obviously not a brilliant game, but it's enough to fit into a perfect lineup. Small forwards, LeBron, 59.2. He does love playing the Knicks. That's a huge triple-double for him. And Nick Batum went 47.4. He has been tremendous. And again, one of those people that people love to hate for whatever reason. I have no idea. Paulie Millsap, 57.3. Kevin Love at 55.4. And of course, when you play the Bulls, Dwayne Dedmon, 34.6. Career-high numbers. That is exactly what happens when you play Chicago. That total gave you 405.4. If you are watching this live or on YouTube, I hope you're enjoying that jersey that's there behind my head between the Bulls and the Bucks jersey. It's the Western Bulldogs jersey. We had a big win today, and that's why my voice feels a little bit, my voice sounds a little bit croaky, because I have been at the footy today and have been screaming relatively loudly as we dismantled the Fremantle Dockers. So that's why that jersey's up there. And it's a little bit small because it's Ben's. So you can see that it's actually one from his from a couple of years ago. So hung that up there just to show a bit of a Australian flavor to the show. We're going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we're going to be back to talk about those games from Saturday. All right, guys, we're back in business here. Let's have a look at these games. There were 10 of them, so let's get stuck right into them. The Pacers and the Nets. Paul George played. They lost. The Nets are really pissing off Celtics fans, I'm sure, at the moment by getting these victories. They really have no business in getting. George played 35 minutes. He had 27 points, 4 rebounds, 3 steals, and 3 triples. So it looks like he is fine from that leg injury, which is great. The field goal percentage, he's a real, real field goal percentage problem. And if you're drafting him next year, you really do have to pay attention to that. Otherwise, you will lose that category on most weeks, because not only is he a shit shooter, that he does it in so many attempts that it hurts tremendously. Georgie Hill, one of his better games, 17, 3, and 2. 2 triples and 3 steals. That's a nice little performance from him after quite a down couple of months. And Jan Mahimi blew up for 18 points in 26 minutes, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. Also went 6 of 8 from the free throw line. So that's something that you don't expect from Mahimi. He'd been up and down. I still think that he has value in free throw punt builds. And I still think he should be held in those sort of formats. But he's not a must-own guy at this point. CJ Miles with George playing only got the 14 minutes, 12 points with 3 triples and 2 steals. Well, Jordy Hill played 21 off the bench and went 12-6-3 with 2 steals and a block. Miles Turner could not replicate his birthday performance. 6-5, that's not that ideal. 4 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block, so still getting it done and I still love him. Where Monte Ellis was putrid, he had 3 points in his 32 minutes. He did dish 6 assists with one 3-pointer. Not a great night from Monte. Only took 4 shots, and the only player on the Pacers who took more than 10 shots was George, who took 21. So obviously things were not ideal with them. Ty Lawson played 15 minutes, 5-4-2. Clearly no opportunity for him to have any sort of relevance in standard leagues. On to the Nets. My boy. Well, he's not really my boy, but I'll put him in the sort of my boy category. Shane Larkin, 27 minutes, 14 points, 5 assists and 3 steals. 5 games next week. Absolute add to me, Larkin. He is clearly the better player over Don Sloan, as much as people defied, as much as the Nets coach defied me for 3 months. He is the better player. There's always a risk that the minutes get split again, but they're going to run with Larkin as the starter, and hopefully they give him close to 30 minutes most nights. And another guy that I talked about the other day, Sergei Karasev, 17-7-4, 2 steals and a 3 in 26 minutes. I think it's fair to say that he has worked himself into keeping that role for a little bit. Now, when they announced the switch of Larkin and Karasev becoming the starters, they said, we're going to give Larkin the start for the rest of the season, and we're going to give Karasev a few games to see what he can do. I think that this sort of performance means they want to keep him in that role. Wayne Ellington's out of the rotation, which is 3 months too late, and Karasev can distribute the ball. We've seen big assist numbers from him. With a 5-game week next week, he is not the dumbest ad either. He is going to, I would say he would start all these games. He should get 25 minutes in all of them, and he can be productive. Big game from Sergei today. Now, he won't shoot 5-7 from the field. This is just his third season as well, and he has had injuries, so he's still a young player developing, coming across from Russia as well. He's got a lot of adjustment to do. I think he can be a decent player, so he's a name to watch. Don Sloan was actually pretty good. He hit all 3 of his shots, which won't happen often. 11-5-5 with a steal. Hard to look with 5 games though, even in 20 minutes, it's not a bad guy to look at, but I'd much rather be taking Larkin and probably even Karasev. Brookie Lopez, 23-9-4 with 2 steals. While Bojan Bogdanovic's minutes have been reduced with the arrival of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but he got 18 points with 4 triples in his 28 minutes, so he still has that value as a points and threes guy. Speaking of RHJ, talked about him yesterday and he had a brilliant performance the last time that the Nets played, and there's a lot of people, got to own him. But again, 16 minutes for Hollis-Jefferson. He plays 16 minutes in 5 games next week. It's not many minutes. It's 80 minutes. That's not a lot. And that's equivalent to someone playing, if you play 30 minutes a night and you play 3 games, it's more than what you're going to get out of Hollis-Jefferson playing 5 games at 16. Yes, he can get you steals, but then nights like this, 6-3-1 with 1 steal, it's a poo game. It's not good. That's the problem with him. So to me, he is not a must-own. He wasn't a must-own this week. You really do have to look at him with the 5 games coming up. But if it's going to be reduced minutes and he's not going to get to 20, then the benefit of him having 5 games is not there, and he becomes like a normal player. Sean Kilpatrick continues to score, so if you need points, he's going to be a great add. 23 minutes, 14 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 assist as well. Thad Young, not his best night. 8-3-2 with a steal and a block in 30 minutes. Markel Brown only got 4 points in his 9 minutes as well. The next game, the Toronto Raptors and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Raptors get the big victory, not surprising, against this team. Minutes didn't need to be through the roof. Obviously, they got the easy one. DeMar DeRozan played 30, 23-5-5. And Jonas Valanciunas, another 26 minutes, 10-9, 1 assist and 5 blocks. This guy is very, very good. And I have it every year that this is his breakout year. And Dwayne Casey stonewalls me. But hopefully, it's coming for him soon. Luis Scola hit another 4 triples. We talk about guys like Al Horford hitting a lot of 3-pointers, which you don't expect. Luis Scola has hit this season, I'm going to bring it up now because I know it's some stupid number. He has hit this season 63 3-pointers. In his previous 5 seasons, he had hit 9. In his previous 5 seasons, he had attempted 52 3-pointers. He's hit 63 this year. All of a sudden, he's just a 3-point shooter. It's obviously the way the game is going, and he was just never relied upon to do that. But he, in his last 4 games, Luis Scola is averaging 3.5 triples per game. per game. He is cutting into Patrick Patterson's playing time. Now, Patrick Patterson played 20 here and had 16 with three triples as well. And these two guys are becoming really nice power forward three-point stream guys. I'd probably put a marginal more amount of trust in Patterson, and I wouldn't expect them to go 5 of 7 and 5 of 4 of 5 like they both did in this game. But the fact that they're getting so many threes is going to be useful to stream. Normie Powell, 34 minutes, 15, 7 and 2 with two threes. Can't say enough about this kid. I really, really like what he can do. He's continuing to get minutes with Terrence Ross out, and he's continuing to show that, you know what, he's actually been more productive than Terrence Ross in the games that he's played. Jim Johnson played 20. He had 11 and 5 with two steals. He's just not the same player anymore, but he will have some sort of explosive defensive game at some point. Bismack Biyombo, obviously back to a stream option now. 19 minutes, 7 and 5 with two blocks. Great rebound stream, great block stream. Not reliable enough to hold the whole time. And Kyle Lowry had 11, 2, and 8 with two steals. Also, Bruno got on the court. He played 2 minutes and missed a shot. That's always big news when Bruno Caboclo can get on the court. On the Pelicans, no Norris Cole, no Drew Holiday, no Ryan Anderson. Predicting what the Pelicans are going to do on a nightly basis is really fraught with danger at this point. Tone Douglas played just 22 minutes in this one after being a 35, 36 guy previously. 11 points, two triples, and a steal. I still think that he's worth looking at. Timmy Frazier played 29. He went 12, 3, and 6. He's a guy to own. Luke Babbitt, after a real disappointing game on the bench, and think, okay, the Babbitt's on the bench. Maybe he's going to play just 20 minutes a night now. Well, in this one, he plays 28 off the bench and goes 14, 4, and 5 with two threes. Alexei Ajinsa, who blew up in the last game, well, he only played 21 in a start and went 9, 4, and 1 with a steal and a block. I still think Ajinsa is going to be a valuable guy, but none of these guys are absolute must-own players. They're guys that, yeah, you own and you see what you need, but they're not like, I need to get Ajinsa, Frazier, Douglas onto my team. Omer Asik is just brutally bad. 24 minutes, 7 and 7. He is literally a rebound guy, and that is it. And Alonzo G chimed in with 18 and 8 in his 41 minutes. I will not trust that one single bit. I would rather have Babbitt, Frazier, Ajinsa, Douglas over Alonzo G. Jordy Hamilton, just recently signed by the team, he played 24 minutes and went 11, 4, and 3. And the signing of Hamilton means we're probably not going to see Cole for another couple of games. And hopefully, you're not holding on to Norris Cole. I would think you shouldn't be at this point. The fact that Alexei Ajinsa played 21 minutes and Kendrick Perkins played 16 and Omer Asik played 24 is a disgrace. As you can tell, I'm not a massive Omer Asik and Kendrick Perkins fan. The Chicago Bulls and the Orlando Magic. The Bulls are terrible. They are really, really bad. Taj Gibson played 26 minutes only. He had 16 and 3 with an assist. He went 8 of 9 from the field. He is not a must-own player. Although, with 5 games, I think you do have to. Jim Butler is clearly in trouble. There's issues here. 30 minutes, less than 30 for Butler. 12, 5, and 1, 2 steals and a block. He's been not only not himself, he's been bad since coming back from this knee injury. And we're hearing conflicting reports. He needs to have knee surgery. He doesn't. But in the last month, he's ranked outside the top 70. This is Jim Butler from 2013-14 we're seeing at the moment. Just not good at all. It is really weird to see what he's doing. He cannot shoot at all. He is shooting 40% from the field. He's shooting 15% from three. And he's only a 32% shooter from three on the season. He is just really, really struggling. I did not have massive high hopes for him coming into this year. He did exceed those significantly to start off the year, but he is absolutely killing you at the moment. Let's hope that a 5-game week gets him going, but I think that Butler doesn't play 5 games this week. I think he misses a game because it is clearly something not right with him. He's just, there can't be anything. He can't be fully healthy. There is no way. Pau Gasol played 22 minutes, 7, 5, and 8 with a block. He's not going to touch 30 minutes next week. I wouldn't have thought it. He's a chance to miss a game. Mike Dunleavy, 10 points in 22 minutes. Whatever. Dougie McDermott, 12 points with two triples in 21 minutes. He is literally a contributor in points and threes, and that is it. And he's not getting enough minutes now. Bob Portis, 4 and 7. Not good enough. Tony Snell actually played 6 minutes. That's how bad this game was. If Snell's getting into the rotation, just a complete mess with this game. Aaron Brooks ejected again as well. The Bulls are terrible. They're going to miss the playoffs, and they should. The Magic. When you play the Bulls, your big men can do whatever they want. Dewayne Dedmon played just 22 minutes and had 18 and 13 with two assists. Pick up people playing the Bulls. Play them in DFS. They will destroy. Jason Smith had 14, 5, and 3 with two blocks in his 24 minutes. Aaron Gordon filled the stat sheet 9, 5, and 6 with a 3, 2 steals, and a block. So the best three of the best four players for the Magic were all big men. But it doesn't even start there. I'll go in DFS and talk, oh, yeah, play your big men against the Bulls. And you go, you know what? I'll play your wings against the Bulls. Oh, you know what? Play your point guards against the Bulls. Play everyone against the Bulls. The Bulls play five games next week, so that means you're going to have lots of opportunities to actually play them and teams to put up big stats. This was a smashing and should never have happened, especially with no Vucevic and no Victor Oladipo. Amazing. Oladipo hopefully is back for next week. Vucevic should appear, I would say, at some point towards the end of next week. It doesn't look like he will be shut down. He looks like he'll come back at some point. Brandon Jennings, 13 minutes, 7, 3, and 5. CJ Watson, from not playing at all to 28 minutes, 6, 6, and 3. Andrew Nicholson had 14 in his 21. Another big man, 14 and 6 for Nicholson in 21 minutes. If you play the Bulls, you love it. And Mario Hezonja had a quintuple 1. 5 points, 1 3, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 block. Even in the minutes he's getting to replace Oladipo, he's not doing enough for us to really even consider as a stream option at this point. The Bulls are bad. It is not good. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks. LeBron with a big triple-double, 27, 11, and 10, two threes, one steal, and two blocks. Pretty good percentages. And Kev Love was good as well, 28 and 12 with four triples on a really nice 10 of 19 shooting. It's going to be really hard to trust him doing that. But once you get one of these guys out, like Kyrie set this game out, the other two are going to put up big numbers. And it's just what we've seen happen basically over the last 2 years. Mo Williams was dusted off, and he played 13 minutes and had 8 points with two threes. JR had 13, 3, and 2, and Matt Dellavedova played 31 minutes and went 10, 4, and 2 with three triples of his own. Obviously, guys like Dellavedova are only going to be streaming options if Irving happens to sit. The front court situation, Tristan Thompson, 6 and 7 in 22 minutes. Tim Mozgov, that is four in a row of 20-plus for Mozgov, 5 and 6 with a block. And his main fantasy impact at the moment, Mozgov, is the fact that he is impacting what Tristan Thompson can do. So Thompson, Mozgov, Fry, none of these guys should be owned. Now, Thompson is owned in 59% of leagues. It is way too high. He is not getting big minutes. He is not getting big stats. He was only a rebounds and field goal percentage guy anyway, and it's not happening. There is no point in holding on to him. He is literally a I need rebounds on the last day of a matchup. Tristan Thompson's playing. Let's see what we can get out of him. Mallow played, oh, he didn't quite play 40, but he's pretty bloody close. 39 and a half minutes, 28 and 9, 5 triples, 1 assist, and 2 steals. Continues to put up massive numbers thanks to the big minutes that he's playing. Also getting big minutes.
Percentages.
41 minutes. Thankfully, he's back getting big, big playing time. 19 and 6, 1 3, 3 assists, 1 steal. Big numbers from Porzingis. Robin Lopez, only the 8 and 6 here in 26 minutes. It's never a good thing if you're a big man going up against the Cavs, although Porzingis did pretty well. Aaron Aflalo, hopefully you don't own him. 27 minutes off the bench for 5 points, so Sasha Vujacic can play 21. He went 9 and 5, while Jose Calderon only played 21 minutes, but still dished 7 assists and had a steal. He has value in 12-team leagues. He's owned in 37% of leagues, so he is available in plenty of spots, and he's getting you 5-plus assists almost every night. That can be really valuable. Langston Galloway had 5 points in his 19 minutes, while, of course, Jerry and Grant just rotting on the bench, playing only 8 minutes. You'd think on a night where Calderon plays just 21, you could get Grant into the action, but apparently not. Apparently you're going to go with guys like Galloway and Vucic who aren't point guards. So that's the way that Kurt Rambis rolls these days. Not even these days. That's the way he rolls. Mistake after mistake. The Atlanta Hawks and the Detroit Pistons. Kent Bazemore, a throwback game to the start of the season. 33 minutes, 17, 4, and 2. 3 threes, 1 steal, 1 block. 7 of 9 shooting. And this is what fueled his red-hot start to the season. Completely unsustainable red-hot shooting. So I look at this and go, you know what, that's nice, but he is not a good shooter. He is not a 7 of 9 shooter, and I'm not rushing to go and grab Kent Bazemore. Most, for nearly every game these last 3 weeks, you know, Thabo's played more than him, and Thabo didn't even play at all in this game. So you'd expect when Sefolosha plays, Bazemore's not going to play 33 minutes, and we didn't really hear anything before the game about Sefolosha that I could see. Timmy Hardaway had 3 points and it wasn't a good night from him, going 1 of 8, and that all contributed to Bazemore getting more playing time. So I'm sure you're going to see threads and Twitter things, you know, Baze God returned and all that sort of shit. He didn't. And I'm not rushing to pick up Bazemore. You know my thoughts on him as a player and as a fantasy contributor. This is one of those games that happens, and I'm not getting overly excited about it. Al Horford, 13-5-5, a 3, a steal, 2 blocks, does it all. And Jeffy Teague went 12-4-12, and a great story popping up about Jeff Teague on Reddit that I retweeted today about the Hawks team bus apparently forgetting him and leaving him at the stadium. And Teague just walking around the parking facility, just sad Jeff Teague waiting to be picked up. So that's a pretty humorous anecdote. Dennis Schroeder, productive, 11-3-7 in 24 minutes, but you know my thoughts on him. How do you predict it? Because he'll go for 7-1 in the next game. He's very, very up and down, and it's all at the whims of what Budenholzer wants to do. Now, he did play alongside Teague in this one, which is something they haven't gone to very often, but I imagine some of that's to do with them not having Cephalosha available also. Mike Scott went 10-5-2 in his 16 minutes, while Chrissy Humphreys went 11-5 in 21, and Humphreys makes a really nice 16-team league guy. On the Pistons, Toby Harris, 21-10-5, a block and a 3. Big percentages. I'm a massive Toby fan, as you know. And Andre Drummond, 19-17 with 2 blocks on big percentages. Aaron Baines also got into the action, 15-7 in 17 minutes, while Marcus Morris went 13-5-5. Reg Jackson, really struggling at the moment, 30 minutes only, and he's never going to get big minutes because Stan Van Gundy just never does that with his point guard, he never does that. But surely you have to look and go, my other point guard is Steve Blake. Then I should be, if I'm giving Marcus Morris 39 minutes when I've actually got capable guys to play that position, like Toby Harris, like Stan Johnson, like Darren Hilliard, like Anthony Tolliver, whereas my backup point guard is Steve Blake, then surely Van Gundy should go, you know what, I probably don't need to stick rigidly and play my point guards only 30 minutes because the guy who's backing them up is absolutely atrocious. Now, over the last month, Jackson's ranked outside the top 100. He is really struggling. Is he a guy that you drop? Look, he's hurting your field goal percentage a lot. 41% over that time, 37% over the last 2 weeks on 14 attempts, but he's still giving you 6 assists over a 3. The problem with him at the moment is his steals are way down. He's averaging 0.1 steals over the last 2 weeks. Way down. His scoring's not there. As dumb as it might sound, he is not an absolute must-hold at the moment. I probably personally wouldn't drop him. But when he's going through this stretch and he's averaging under 30 minutes a game over the last month, which again I think is just stupid, but it's what's happening. And you have to take that into consideration. You have to look at this and go, who else is around? What moves can I make? Who can I add? Is Shane Larkin with 5 games next week a better option than Reggie Jackson? I'd probably lean and say no, but the Pistons play 3 games next week. They play the Thunder, then they play on Tuesday, and then they play on Friday, Saturday, a back-to-back Dallas and Chicago, which is a pretty nice matchup. But one game in the first 4 days, and it's likely to be a subpar performance, the Nets play 4 games, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. The Pistons in that time play 2. You could get more out of Shane Larkin. It might seem just ridiculous, but it might be a move that actually wins you your league. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 9 points, 2 triples, not a lot else. Definitely not a good night from him. Stan Johnson, 4-5 in 24 minutes. And Stevie Blake, the aforementioned Stevie Blake, 3-3-6 in his 18 minutes. The next game was the San Antonio Spurs B team against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Unsurprisingly, a 20-point loss for the Spurs. And this is why I was mentioning yesterday that it was really hard to know what to do DFS-wise with this team. You would think Danny Green's got a real big opportunity here. Well, he had 2 points in 22 minutes. Kevin Martin, maybe he gets a big run. This is 3 points in 18 minutes. Kyle Anderson played 30. Oh, that looks like it's a big DFS night. Not really. 7-5-3 with 3 steals. Andre Miller chimed in with 11-8. David West went 17-6. John Simmons went 17 points in 29 minutes. Boban played 27 minutes. He went 13-6 with a steal and a block. Just continues to put up numbers when he gets an opportunity. Boris Diaw, 10-4. Paddy Mills, 10-2 with 2 threes. Just so much value was staring you in the face, and it didn't really come through. And that's why it was really so hard to deal with these guys from a DFS point of view. And in a cash game situation, it was really, really tough to know what to do because you just don't know where it's going to come from in a situation like that where it's just completely up in the air. Onto the Thunder. The minutes were reduced for most of their guys, but they still put up big lines. Durant, 31-5-3 with 5 triples. Westbrook, 29-6-8. And Serge Ibaka, 15-8, 4 blocks and a 3. Exactly what his owners have been wanting to get from him. That's a really big DFS line as well at that really low salary. So nice night from Serge. And Enes Kanter, just a casual 20-10 with a steal and a block in just 21 minutes. He is so good. And I know you will cringe at me saying that, but he is such a good player. In a scoring and rebounding and offensive rebounding sense, he is absolutely invaluable and he tears the asshole out of teams that he plays in that second unit. His defense is poor, we know that. But Jesus, his rebounding ability off the offensive glass and his ability to score offensively down low is almost second to none in the NBA. If only he could become a below average defender, then we would have a really good center on our hands. The problem is, he's worse than below average. Steve Adams, 9-6 in his 27 minutes. Randy Foy continues to be absolutely disgraceful. 2 points in 22 minutes, while Dion Waiters put up the rare 18 trillion. 18 minutes, no stats. Oh, sorry, he had 2 turnovers. That's not a trillion. So a big, big night from Dion. And Campaign had 0 points in his 14 minutes. Did still dish 3 assists, though. The Utah Jazz and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Jazz will be happy to get out of that one with a victory. 18-5-5 for Gordy Haywood with 2 threes and 2 blocks. Derek Favors, 19-5 with a couple of blocks. And Rudy Gobert, only the 5 points, but at least he got you 4 blocks and he got you 11 rebounds, which is sort of what you want from him. Still shit from the free throw line, provides no offense, and it was something that I stressed absolutely ad nauseum in the preseason. If you're drafting him, you need to be considering a punt of free throws and you need to be considering a punt of points. Otherwise, you need to draft specifically around him, and that is the way that it's panned out, and I don't imagine much changing with him moving forward. Rod Hood had one of his better games, 7 of 11 from the field for 15-4-4 with a triple, a nice, efficient performance. And Shelvin Mack, the wheels are falling off the Mack truck here, 6-2-6 with 2 steals on 3 of 14 shooting. And it happens. Guys aren't good, and eventually, you know, things get back to how they're supposed to be. And Shelvin Mack is not good. And he had to be owned, and he probably still has to be owned. But he's no good. And the Jazz have got those other ball handlers in Haywood and in Hood, and they're taking it away from him. Now, the Jazz play Monday. They play the Lakers. That's a great matchup. They play the Warriors on Wednesday. They'll probably get smashed, but it's a high-tempo game. They play the Timberwolves on Friday. They play the Suns on Sunday. So there's a really fantastic schedule for these guys next week. So you'd probably want to hold on to Mack in that sort of situation. But he just has not been good really at all at the moment. Trey Lyles, again, showing what he can do. 15-4 with 3 triples. It's really going to be hard for him to have an opportunity to show out in the next 3 years, I would say. But I love what Trey Lyles can do. He is a significant dynasty target for me if I'm just looking to stash for the next 4 years. I think that he can be a very, very impactful fantasy guy. Turns out Rick Rubio is pretty good. 31 minutes for Rubio, 23-5-6, 2 threes, 4 steals, 1 block on 9 of 12 shooting. I know it's hard for some people to believe, but he is actually extraordinarily good, and I love seeing the way that he's playing at the moment. It is fantastic. I own Rubio in plenty of leagues. I've owned him in plenty of leagues for forever. I think he is a tremendously underrated fantasy asset. Ricky Rubio is, over the last 2 weeks, a top 10 fantasy player. He's a top 25 guy over the last 2 months. He's a top 35 guy for the course of the season. And you punt field goal percentage, which you probably would have done to draft him, and we are talking a significant top 20 sort of player. He is putting up tremendous numbers. Even not punting those last 2 weeks, a top 25 guy, I don't think anyone would have Rubio in that spot because we all know, and he gets trashed for his bad shooting. It's one category, and you work around it. And you know what? The last 2 weeks, he's shooting 49% from the field. He's shooting 55.5% over the last month. That's actually, it's clearly not bad. 38% from three. He's shooting 33% from three this season. He's shooting 38% from the field. It's looking like it's going to be his best shooting season ever, and it's not great, but when you're at 43% over the last 2 months, 45% over the last month, it shows a massive, massive improvement. And working with this team that he's got around him, it's working wonders for him. And I am a massive Ricky Rubio fan. Karl Anthony Towns, 14 and 11 in 34 minutes. Two steals and two blocks. Just, he's good. Wigo was poor, 13, 4, and 2 on 4 of 12 shooting and 5 of 7 from the line. And Levine was bad too, 9 points with 2 assists on 3 of 11. And Gorgui Dieng, also bad, 4, 3, and 2. Did have a steal, did have a block, but not his best performance. The bench, they did a little bit, but the team scored just 84 points. So not a great night for the Timberwolves. Charlotte and Milwaukee. Nick Batum, turns out he's pretty good as well. 25, 7, and 8 with 5 triples on great shooting. Loved my Nick Batum. Marvin Williams had a bounce back as well. He'd been pretty poor over the last probably 2-3 weeks, but 21 and 8 with 4 triples and 3 blocks is tremendous, and he has had a fantastic season. Jeremy Lin, only 25 minutes, and that's sort of where he's going to stay, but 9, 4, and 4 with 5 steals is tremendous. Now, he was 4 or 5 from the field. That's not a realistic amount. He's not a 12-team guy for me. 18 points for Kemba with 3 triples and 6 assists. And Courtney Lee, 12, 4, and 5 with 2 threes and a block. So a nice performance, and 35 minutes for Lee too. Cody Zeller struggled. He went 4 and 3. Did have 2 blocks, while Al Jefferson had 15 and 6 in his 22 minutes. You know my thoughts on Jefferson by this point. It was a smashing, really. Let's get onto the Bucks. Jabari Parker, 15, 7, and 4 in 38. Probably a bounce back from him. And Chrissy Middleton, 13 points with 5 assists, has dropped off significantly over the last month. Giannis, not his best game, and that's an understatement. 8, 3, and 1 with 2 steals, while Greg Monroe had 12 and 6 in 23 minutes. What we saw here is Jared Bayless only played 22 minutes because Jason Kidd, after playing him 30-plus the last couple, we thought maybe we're finally settling into a rotation here. Well, nah, he plays 22, and Tyler Ennis plays 28 and actually looks decent. 9, 4, and 12 for Ennis with a 3 and a steal. I don't buy into it being something we need to pay much attention to, though. And Rashad Vaughn got 22 minutes as well. I would like to see them use more minutes on Vaughn down the stretch here and let him develop, because he has been bad. He's played 15 to 17 minutes most nights. He hasn't been good in them, but he can develop, and they need someone who can be a shooter. And he can be that guy. They should be giving him 25 minutes a night here down the stretch and allowing him to develop. And I'm not sure that Jason Kidd's a massive fan of Rashad Vaughn, but we'll see exactly how that plays out. Boston and Phoenix. Close one in the end here. The Celtics get the victory. Isaiah Thomas, 28, 6, and 3 in 33 minutes. And big Kelly Olynyk, 16 and 3 with 2 triples in his 22 minutes. I don't need to say much more about Kelly Olynyk than I haven't already said this season. You need to watch him, but don't own him until we know he's getting 30. Amir Johnson, he only got 25 minutes. He had 2 and 6 with a steal and a block. So still okay, but not great. And Jared Salinger down to 22. So the Brad Stevens front court, can't think of a word without being too aggressive. Front court confusion continues. Avery Bradley had 15 points on 5 of 16 shooting, so that's not great. Well, Evan Turner went 17, 11, and 3 with a block. I think that Turner should be owned in majority of situations. You obviously need to look at your own team. Now, the Celtics play 4 games next week. They play 4 road games, and they don't have the most ideal schedule. They do play on Thursday, and they do play the Lakers on Sunday, so that's okay. But 2 other games against the Clippers and the Warriors on the Monday and the Friday, not a great spot. So adding someone on the Monday, you probably won't be able to get them involved in your team. But some nice games at the end of the week for the Celtics players. Jonas Jerebko had 25 minutes, all his points from triples, 9 points with 7 rebounds. He's just more of that deeper league guy, while Marcus Smart played 33, went 9, 8, and 4 with a steal and a block, and that's basically perfect Marcus Smart, exactly what you expect from him. Don't expect big scoring, but get rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. You would hope for a couple of triples, but that's decent. He's not a must-own guy, though, but I do like him adding towards the end of next week. For the Suns, Tyson Chandler was out again. John Jenkins got another start, perhaps surprisingly, not perhaps surprisingly, absolutely surprisingly, with John Lua out of this one as well. So the Suns started Brandon Knight, Devin Booker, and Johnny Jenkins. And Jenkins played 17 minutes, had 9 points, all from 3, had a steal, a block, and hit all 3 of his shots. You'd think when a guy's hit all 3 of his shots, all from 3, that he'd play a few more minutes, but apparently not. PJ Tucker, 9, 10, and 5 with a steal and a block in 38 minutes. He fits a punt points build team perfectly at the moment. Devin Booker, 21-4-4. Super inefficient, going 8 of 20, but you sort of come to expect that from him at the moment. And Mirza Teletovic played 32 with Lua out. 17-9, 2 steals and a 3. And if Lua and Chandler are going to remain out, then Teletovic is going to have to be the guy that plays. Apparently, Alex Len can't get to 30 minutes anymore. 28 minutes, 10-8 with 4 fouls. He is not a must-own guy any longer. Ron Price had 0 points in his 21 minutes, and Brandon Knight had 19-3 in his return from illness, added a couple of triples as well. The last game of the night, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Portland Trailblazers. Ish Smith, 17-14-9, a steal and a 3. You know what the deal is with Smith. He's going to get you the counting stats, he's going to hurt your percentages, and that's just what it's going to be. With no Nerlens Noel, and he's going to be up for the next game as well. Rishon Holmes hurt his Achilles in this one, and Sonny Weems is out as well, and likely he's got a quad strain, so he's likely to miss some time. Bob Cove, a big game from him, 17-11 with a couple of steals and a 3. I feel very free to make sure he's owned in all leagues. Hollis Thompson had a big one as well, but I put zero trust in that. 17-7, 5 triples, 1 steal and a block. You would think that those minutes have to switch between Covington and Thompson pretty soon, but that's a pretty decent night from Hollis. Nicky Stauskas went 13-5 with 3 triples in 26 minutes, but that is far from reliable. While Jeremy Grant had a big one, 13-7-3 with 4 blocks. He also destroyed your percentages, which he will do, and he will be inconsistent, so by no means is he a must-own player. Now, Isaiah Cannon struggled. He played 24 minutes and had 6 points. His ability to hit threes is still there, but he is dropping off with the return of Covington. He's not required to play as much before, and that's going to be a concern. Onto the Blazers, CJ, 25-2-5, added 5 steals and a block, so a big night there. And El-Farouq Aminu scored 20 points, which is actually a career high for Aminu. That's how bad a scorer he is. 3 triples, 8 rebounds, 2 assists. He's too up and down for me to own on a permanent basis. In a 14-team league, yes, absolutely. The Blazers have a pretty nice schedule. They start off with Sacramento next week. Then they play on Thursday. Then they have a back-to-back Saturday-Sunday. So adding him for that sort of thing is not terrible. But I don't think that you're going to be able to, I know that you're not going to be able to trust him to put up these sort of numbers. He's just as likely to have 6-1 in the next game and not get anywhere close to what he just did here. Mo Harkless started, played 30 minutes, 16-8, triple one, bang him in. He's a 14-team league. He's a must-own guy to me at this point if they're going to run him like this. And even in a 12-team league, I do like his ability to contribute. Again, same sort of scheduling issues we talked about with Aminu. Damian Lillard, 16-5-7 with 2 threes. He just struggles against Philadelphia. For whatever reason, he doesn't do what he needs to do. Mason Plumlee, 8-10 in 22 minutes, while Alan Crabb had just 4 points. Eddie Davis, just one of the better stream options. 13 boards, 2 blocks, 1 steal. He gives you great rebounds, he gives you great blocks as a streaming option. So Davis is so underappreciated in my mind. Just a guy that's been completely misused throughout his entire NBA career. He should have, that would piss me off at Ed Davis is years and years ago when he played for Toronto and he finally got a starting role and he was starting to look really good. And then they traded him for Rudy Gay to Memphis, and then he sat on Memphis's bench and completely did nothing. And then went to the Lakers and was insanely benched there, and now he's in Portland and he just continues to be misused in my opinion. That's it. Those games are done, aren't they? Yes, they are. We are going to take a quick break. I'm going to try and soothe this raspy voice of mine, and then we're going to be back to talk about how you can try and win your matchup in your seasonal head-to-head leagues for Sunday, and then preview the games for DFS. I saw you.
I'm not afraid to
head-to-head leagues for Sunday. A couple of live questions have come in. I'm going to try and answer them. I think I need a bit more detail really to get into them though. So let's have a look at those questions. Zubin with another question. In a two-keeper league for next year, who would you retain out of the Claw, which I assume is Kawhi Leonard, Clay Thompson, agent blocker, which I assume is Hassan Whiteside? It really depends on the way that you want to set your team up. Kawhi Leonard is an absolute must to me. Depending on when you have to choose this, Zubin, Whiteside, we don't know where he's going to go. I would want to wait to see there. I would probably be inclined to take Whiteside though, and go with Leonard and Whiteside, and really lock up those defensive numbers, steals, blocks, rebounds, good field goal percentage. The free throw should be all right. That'd be the two that I'd lean, but I really would want to wait to see what happens with Whiteside in free agency. Danny Triella also has a question. Where do you see Gorgie Dieng being drafted next season, and what's his value in dynasty leagues? I think that Dieng goes at about 70. Really, obviously very, very early to try and determine that. I think I rate Dieng a lot higher than a lot of people do, and a lot of and perhaps a lot of NBA general managers. So not sure that he's going to be locked into a long-term, big value sort of situation on an improving team. So I'm not sure that his value in dynasty leagues is going to continue to improve. But I think that he goes probably about 70-ish next season. Obviously, it's way too early to be knowing those things in advance. Let's have a look now at which guys who might be available on your waiver wire and can win you each category. Let's start with points. Let's see which guys who might be around who can help you win the points the most. If JJ Redick's around, I'm looking at him. Lou Williams taking on the Wizards with D'Angelo Russell likely not to play. I think that Williams, we got him projected at 30 minutes. I think that he is going to be a points guy. Jamal Crawford is another one. He's got a great matchup against the Nuggets. JJ Barea, one of the best options out there to add. We'll talk about him when we get to assists as well. But JJ Barea, with no Darren Williams, I think you almost have to look at adding JJ. Bob Cove, if he's around, which he probably isn't, you look at him. And Carl Landry in Philadelphia with a high-tempo match against the Warriors. He's a relatively good value play, I would say, if you're looking for big man numbers. But we're concentrating on points here. Let's look at three-pointers. Who's going to be the best three-point guy? Obviously, JJ Redick and Bob Carver, the two ones there. Isaiah Cannon is an option. Hollis Thompson is also an option in Philadelphia. Both those guys, that's really all they do. Lou Williams is another good three-point add. And Pat Beverly, he might be around, and you can get two triples a game out of Beverly relatively comfortably. And of course, once again, JJ Barea comes up. Rebounds. Who is going to be the best rebounding option to add for tomorrow? Let's have a look at who is available. If Nikola Jokic is around, clearly you're adding him, but Salah Mejri is the guy. Now, he did struggle against the Warriors, and he could very much struggle against the Kings. Now, he's taking on DeMarcus Cousins, so foul trouble could be an issue, but I imagine he gets more than the 15 minutes he got against the Warriors, so 10 rebounds is not out of the question. Yusuf Nurkic, Jan Mahinmi, these are two options of guys, and Willie Cauley-Stein is another option for rebounds who could be available. We don't know what George Karl, we're going to talk Willie Cauley-Stein a little bit later. We don't know exactly what George Karl is going to do. Invariably, he'll do whatever's the most spiteful. Assists. Barea is the guy. Barea is one of the most must-add guys for tomorrow. He's going to help you points, threes, and assists. You're looking for 6-plus assists from Barea. Marcelo Huertas with Russell out is also in line. He won't do much else, but he will get you assists. So I do like adding him. Ray Felton, TJ McConnell, DJ Augustine. There's some other guys you can add to get your assist numbers up. For the steals category, it's a little bit harder to get steals. Otto Porter, if he's around, Patrick Beverley, Ray Felton. TJ McConnell is a guy who can get you some one or two steals and get you 5 or 6 assists as well. So he's an interesting guy to have a look at for Philadelphia, especially with Sonny Weems out, maybe a couple of extra minutes there for McConnell. Jan Mahinmi is a center who gets you more steals than you'd imagine. He's averaging over one steal a game, so he's a guy who can get you steals there. And Sean Livingston, not a bad guy at getting steals as well, with the Warriors potentially absolutely smashing the Sixers. And with Steve Kerr also floating the option out there that the Warriors might sit one of their starters or some of their starters, Livingston might see 24-25 minutes, and he could be a real interesting guy and a good rebounder as a point guard as well. So he's another option for the steals category. Let's look at blocks. who's going to be around that could potentially help us win blocks. Now, Salah Mejri is another guy that we talked about. Andy Bogut, he might only play 20 minutes, but he could get two blocks. Jeremy Grant, but the risk of Grant in terms of his percentages is huge, and he can hurt both of those. He could get a lot of blocks, but he could hurt both your percentages. Of course, my mate Cole Aldrich, who is an absolute blocking animal at the moment, 15 minutes, two blocks is not out of the question for him. Mahinmi is an option. Corley Stein is an option as well. And as dumb as it might sound, Roy Hibbert is still alive, and he won't do much, but he could actually help you in the blocks category. Let's see what you can do to try and swing your percentages your way. Field goal percentage, who's going to be around to be a big help in the field goal percentage area? Mejri, again, Mahinmi, Corley Stein, Bogut, Brandon Bass is another guy who helps really well in both percentages. All of those guys are interesting guys to help try and swing that category. Sean Livingston, if you've only got a guard spot available, he's a good field goal percentage guy. Carl Landry and Nene with Markieff Morris unlikely to play is also a possibility. Also Clint Capela, but you have to be wary of the free throw hit that he is going to give you. Speaking of free throws, who can swing that category? Well, Lou Williams and Jamal Crawford are the two guys here who get, you know, the high attempt numbers, especially Lou Williams. He's probably the best one to add there. DJ Augustine's a great free throw shooter. Marcelo Huertas is. Ray Felton is. Brandon Bass, as I talked about, really good help in both percentage categories. Maurice Spates is a big man. He's a guy we've got projected at about 84%, so he can really help in that area too. Cannon and Gaz Harris, if he happens to be around. All these guys are pretty decent free throw guys, but you want to look for the player like a Lou Williams who is going to take five or six attempts from the line and shoot it at over 80%, because that's how you really influence that sort of category. Let's get into the DFS portion of the show now, and let's look at that first game. There are no spreads released for any of these games aside from the Warriors and Sixers. The first game is the Denver Nuggets and the Los Angeles Clippers, and before we get into that, let's talk Blake Griffin, who apparently is going to be allowed to start serving his four-game suspension Sunday. That means that he will be able to return on Sunday, next week. So, you're still not going to get him to play this week. And if you've still been holding him, and you don't have IR, I'm going to imagine you've been eliminated. Otherwise, it's been a pretty bloody good effort to have held Blake Griffin all this way with no IR and continue into the playoffs. Do you add him now? I don't think it's the right time to add him because, again, you're adding a dead spot for 6 days. Maybe if you got things looking wrapped up by Thursday, you might want to look to add him then. But you're adding him now and then playing a week with one man less, it's not going to work out well for you, I wouldn't have thought. Chris Paul is probable with a knee issue, and Ken Faried, he was apparently ready to play last game and didn't get off the bench at all. So we've got him listed as probable at the moment. I wouldn't be putting much faith in Ken whatsoever. The point guard matchup, Chrissy Paul is at 9,600. He has been a little bit underperforming, averaging under 42 points across his last five, and you've got to spend 9,600. But you're taking on the Denver Nuggets. I have absolutely no worries about spending up on Chris Paul here. I think that 50 points is clearly in target for him. Austin Rivers at 3,500, probably not. Emmanuel Mudiay at 58 is only a tournament option, but this is a horrible spot to use him against Chris Paul. And DJ Augustine at 49, he is averaging 27 points across his last five. He feels a little bit risky to me. So you require him putting up these big numbers in limited minutes, and it just doesn't feel like it's got any sort of reliability to it at this point for a DFS situation. Shooting guards, I love with the matchup that Redick and Crawford have got here. 4,700 for Redick, 4,800 for Crawford. Crawford has been easily outperforming Redick, averaging 26 to 21 over the last three, 25 to 22 over the last five. But they both can go for 30 points on a given night. Who do you take? I guess it comes down to personal preference. I actually prefer Redick myself, even though Crawford has been outperforming him. Will Barton at 5,200. You have to pay more for Barton than you do for Crawford and Redick, and he is an absolute roller coaster and is a shit matchup for him. No thanks. And Gaz Harris, the most expensive of all the shooting guards, he's at 5,300 and he is not approaching that sort of value. For as much as I love Gaz, he is not worth a DFS play. Small forwards, this is as big a mess as you'll see. Jeff Green, Wes Johnson, Paul Pierce, Luke Marmute, Jakar Sampson, Axel Toupin. I will venture a guess and none of those will be worth looking at. Power forwards, Darrell Arthur at 3,800. We want to hear some more clarification on Ken Faried, but at 3,800, Arthur does have a tournament ability to go for 30, 35 points. He's already had a 34-point game within the last five, and that can be a real game-changer at 3,800. But if Fareed plays, if they run with Nurkic and Jokic out there more together, then it does limit what Arthur can do. At the center position, there's a few interesting guys here. Definitely Nikola Jokic at 6,200. As much as I love Jokic, my reliability on him getting to 30 is not high. Nurkic is the interesting one. 4,300. He's averaging 27.5 across his last three. He dropped 33 in the last game. If Fareed is out, I feel relatively comfortable about using Nurkic. Now, I do have a sinking feeling in my stomach that he'll go and play 4 minutes, but it feels like he's comfortably jumped Lavernier in the rotation, as he should. It appears the knee issue is not a problem. It appears like any personality and clash issues are also not a problem. And if Fareed is out, he should get 25 and he should be really productive. So Nurkic is a guy that I do like. DeAndre Jordan at 8,200. Well, the Nuggets had been, for a big chunk of this season, a team that was really easy for big men to play against. Not so much anymore. They got a really negative ease ranking for centers. Jordan at 8,200, not averaging 40, averaging just 38.6 across his last five, which is fine, but I don't feel it. The next game, the Houston Rockets and the Indiana Pacers. Again, as I mentioned, no spread released here. We've got James Harden, who missed the last practice with an illness. He's probable, so I think he'll be ready to go. Let's look at the point guards. Pat Beverly, 5,000. And not a good matchup for him, but he does have the ability to easily get to 27, 28 points. So he's in play, but not a good spot. And Georgie Hill at 54, a horrible spot. Not worth a look here. Ty Lawson revenge game? Probably not. Shooting guards, let's get all aboard Jim Harden. He is at 11,000, but I literally don't care that he's at 11,000. He is averaging over 60 points across his last three games. He probably won't get to 60, but 55 should be exactly where he's sitting. I think that Jim is a real solid play for most of the time for the rest of the season. Now, cash games, tournaments, you almost have to have him in a lineup, I would say. Monte Ellis was putrid today. He's at 6,500. I haven't really wanted to use him for a very, very long time. And guys like Rod Stuckey and Solomon Hill are not all that interesting. Who is interesting, though, is Paulie George, who's at 8,700. He's going to get the Rockets bump, which small forwards get in bunches. He hasn't really been giving it to us lovelily. 38 points across the last five is not great at 8,700, but he's had a 61-point game in there. And you're taking on the Rockets. To me, he is a tournament option. He's not a very trustworthy cash option, but the trust goes up because he's playing the Rockets. Trev Ariza at 5,500, that salary's come down. Hate the matchup. Mick Beasley, 4,700. The salary is too high for me to trust him in anything outside of a tournament. Corey Brewer, CJ Miles, not worth looking at. Power forwards, Rockets bump. Here we go. Miles Turner, 5,700. He dropped a 31.5 point performance. Sorry, he's averaging 31.5 over the last three. He dropped a 48 on his birthday. He gets the Rockets here. He's at 57. He approaches 30 points. You win. So I think that Turner is someone you look at. The Rockets power forwards, Donatas Motiejunas, Clint Capela, Terrence Jones, Josh Smith. Obviously, we're not using Jones or Smith because they apparently don't play anymore. Capela, probably not. Motiejunas, just he needs minutes. He's just not getting them. At center, Jan Mahimi, is the Rockets bump enough to make us want to use him? I say yes. He is at 4,800, so that salary has dropped. This is as good a matchup as you get. If he gets 25 points, you get 5x value, and that shouldn't be that hard. He had 33 today. Even if he gets you to 24, that's enough. At 4,800, it's not a big amount. Dwight Howard doesn't touch the ball anymore. He's at 6,900. That salary has dropped, but he is literally doing nothing with it offensively. Not someone I want to be investing in. And Jordan Hill, who had a big game today, dropped 28 points today at 3,600. Look, it's the Rockets, so big men do get a boost. It is a former team of his. He is a very, very sneaky tournament option. Very sneaky. He's only 3,600, so he only needs 20 points, which he can do. The next game, the Dallas Mavericks and the Sacramento Kings. JJ Barea is at 4,000. Not only is he going to be playing more minutes, he is playing the Sacramento Kings. JJ Barea at 4,000 feels like he should be locked into every single one of your cash game teams. Absolutely locked into all of those. Tournaments, you might want to go contrarian, but it's pretty hard to avoid. On the other guy, the next guy, Ray Felton's at 4,100. It's hard to go past Ray. He had 32 in the last game. He's going to play more minutes with Darren out. He is now playing the Kings as well. Clearly, they're on the same team. So he is going to put up numbers. He is a little riskier than what Berea is, but still, he's a great option. Rajon Rondo against his former team. We've seen instances where he got hacked and instances where he hasn't been hacked. The hacking is a real fear, and at 7,700, I don't want to use Rondo. That means Darren Collison at 5,500 becomes a tournament punt, because if Rondo doesn't play, then Collison might get 35. Not if he doesn't play, if he plays, say, 29 minutes or 31 minutes and Collison can play 34, then it's worth looking at. The problem is Collison, for some whatever reason, is not playing 30 minutes anymore, because they've got to give minutes to bullshit players like James Anderson and Seth Curry. That's the concern. Shooting guards. Wes Matthews had been putrid for most of the season. He's at 4,400, but he is averaging almost 32 points across his last three. He's picked up the usage. He's hitting a bunch of threes. The matchup is not difficult. There is risk, but at 4,400, I reckon you almost have to use him. Devin Harris is at minimum salary. He's not really producing a huge amount. Marco Ballinelli, sore foot, might not play. Ben McLemore is upgraded to questionable with his questionable tip. So he wouldn't be worth looking at anyway. And Seth Curry at 3,600. He started the last game and dropped 19 points at 3,600. I'm not interested, nor do I care about James Anderson. Even though they've all got pretty good matchups, it's just too up in the air as to what's going to actually happen. Small forwards, Rudy Gay at 6,400. He's doing absolutely nothing. He still remains a tournament option because I know that he can do better than this, and this is a good matchup for him. Omri Caspi at 45. He's been solidly giving you 22 points a game, but it's not enough at 4,500. Justin Anderson looked good in the last game, so he is maybe worth it. He's at 3,600. He dropped 22 in 25 minutes, but I'm not convinced he gets 25 minutes again. Power forwards, Dirkus. He's at 8,000. He's averaging 47 across his last three. This is a great matchup against the Kings. Dirk will want a big performance. He's had 3 days rest. I am all aboard Dirk at 8,000. Willie Cauley-Stein's at 3,900. He had 40 in the last game. And then George Karl came out and was asked about it. And for whatever reason, George Karl hates rookies, hates common sense, hates developing teams, and was very, very quick to douse the Willie Cauley-Stein hype with big, big chunks of water, saying, oh, he was all right. I think it's probably because of the way that we set up plays for him rather than him doing anything. Cool. Way to instill confidence in your rookie. Karl, you are a massive twat. It's a risk with Cauley-Stein. What's he going to do? Will he play in 5 minutes? I wouldn't be surprised if he plays 5 minutes. Would he play 30? I also wouldn't be surprised. He is a brilliant tournament play at 3,900. He is a shit cash play because we just don't know what Karl is going to do. And Karl would likely just go out and do whatever he can to spite Kings management and to spite Kings fans and players. And whatever he can do the wrong thing, he will likely do it. So that is a massive risk with Cauley-Stein. Dave Lee dropped 32 in the last game. He's at 5,000. Dirk's back. No chance. Charlie Villanueva got 25 with Dirk out as well. No chance. And Quincy Acey at 37. He's the guy who's going to benefit from Carl's stupidity with Cauley-Stein, but he's still, even though he had 25 in the last game, I still put zero trust in him being able to clear 20 points in a fantasy contest. At center, Salah Mejri, 4,500. Ooh, look, it looks good, doesn't it? It looks really good. But big men that play Boogie Cousins invariably get into foul trouble. Big men who are rookies and who are uncoordinated, look, they should really struggle. So Mejri, 4,500, absolutely fine for a tournament. He could go off. He could grab double-digit rebounds. He could also sit on his ass for the majority of the game because Boogie has absolutely roasted him. Boogie is at 10,900. He's doing the roasting, so he is looking for a 50-point performance. I talked about it the other day about Cousins having this foot procedure coming up. People are starting to get panicked about him missing the end of the season. I think that he plays at least the next couple of weeks. I don't imagine that we see Boogie sitting out unnecessarily, but he is clearly in pain. So for him to make it to the end of the season, I think will be a big surprise. If Boogie goes out, which I don't think he will here, Costa Koufos at 3,800 is a tremendous, tremendous option. Zaza Pachulia had 30 points in the last game. He'll probably play 2 minutes in this one, so not a lot of love coming from me for Zaza. Philadelphia and Golden State, the only game with a spread, and it is ugly. 21-point favorites, the Warriors. The total is 226. Ish Smith's at 6,300. Absolutely love Ish Smith here. The Warriors are up and down. It's a fast pace. Smith dropped 46 today. At 6,300, he should exceed 30 points pretty comfortably. Steph Curry. He's at 10,800. The matchup is as tasty as it gets, but it is too tasty that he will likely not top 30 minutes. And that, now look, earlier in the season, the Warriors kept it close against the Sixers and Steph had a brilliant game. But it's at Oracle. There's a chance also that Steph doesn't play. I think that it is very, 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 very risky to play him in a cash game. Even in a tournament, you could get 55 out of him. You could get 33 out of him. And that is the risk you have to take with Steph. If Steph is out, Sean Livingston at 3,900, he would come into play. And Isaiah Cannon at 41, not with Bob Cove back. Shooting guards, Clay, 7,300. Exactly what I said for Steph is the concern. He dropped 51 in the last game. Big, big night from Clay. But at 7,300, does he get over 30 minutes? You would have to think that that's a bit of a risk. Stauskas at 3,900. He's not doing enough at this point. Rush, Clark, Leandro Barbosa, they're not going to be worth looking at. Small forwards, you'll be shocked to know that I'm actually interested in Harry Barnes here. He's priced at 4,300. He's averaging 23 points across his last five. And if at 4,300 you give 23 points, that is over 5x value. It is a good matchup. Barnes has not been someone that they've shown to rest with. Well, they can't afford, not that they can't afford, well, they can sort of not afford to because Iguodala's out, but he's also not that valuable. They want to get playing time into him and actually make him feel better and actually make him get confidence. So I think that he is not a guy that will have his minutes lopped. You know, if Steph plays 30, if Clay plays 30, I see Harry playing 34 and really getting going. So at 4,300, I am actually a little bit behind using Harry Barnes here. Hollis Thompson at 44 has been great. He's averaging 26 across his last five, but I'm waiting for something to drop and for him not to be good, so he remains a tournament option. Bob Cove at 61, as good as he's been, 61 just feels a bit too high for me. Power forward, there's no Nerlens Noel. I think it's very unlikely we see Rishaun Holmes. So Kyle Landry at 4,500 against one of his former teams, he is in play. Now, he wasn't awesome today, only 16 points in 16 minutes, but give him 20 minutes and he should be able to get 20, 25 points. So he's an option. Jeremy Grant at 51 is more of a tournament play. Draymond, same story as Clay, same story as Steph. Yeah, looks awesome, great matchup, but he's risky in cash at the best of times and not in this sort of spot. Spates, no, Elton Brand. He might see some extra run, Elton Brand, but probably not all that interesting of a DFS play. At center, Andy Bogut, don't imagine he does a huge amount here. Varejao, no. The last game of the night, the Washington Wizards and the Los Angeles Lakers. There is a fair bit of fantasy stuff to happen in this one. Kobe is playing. D'Angelo Russell is doubtful to play. Markieff Morris, I would be shocked if he plays as well. And Allen Anderson, who's missed the last couple with that ankle, there's a risk that he doesn't play. So let's look at the point guards. With Russell out, Marcelo Huertas is at 3,600. He has the ability to go for 20+. So he is a tournament play. Johnny Wall at 9,800. The Wizards really need wins. Wall is at 9,800. I'm taking Wall. I think that he is a really good option. I think that 50 points against this team is definitely in play for Johnny. Ramon Sessions is averaging just 9 points across his last five. At shooting guard, do you look at using Kobe? Probably not. 5,800, it's not terrible. He's averaging 27 across his last five, but there are other guys I would prefer, like Jordy Clarkson, who's at 5,500 and is averaging 26. Lou Williams, who's at 5,100, who's averaging 26 across his last five and should play extra minutes with Russell out, like Brad Beal, who's at 5,500 and who's averaging 28 across his last five. Clarkson, Williams, Beal are all shooting guards who are in play. Shooting guards against the Lakers get tremendous bumps, so Beal is a good option here. No, Marcus Thornton, Garrett Temple, Allen Anderson, no real interest in those guys. The small forwards, Otto Porter at 5,200. He's averaging 27 across the last five. That's 5x. Lock it in. Can't see the Lakers being too much of a challenge for him to get 25 points. It's good. He's not great, but I imagine he can get to that. Meta world peace and no value. Power forwards, Markieff at 4,900. I don't think he plays, so I don't think we need to concern ourselves with him. Julius Randle is at 6,600. Now, the Wizards do restrict power forwards pretty well, but he's averaging 35 across his last five, 43 across his last three. I think he is a fine guy to use, but there is a little bit of hesitation there because he can put up some stinkers. We know that, but he should get 30+, and I imagine him running around against Jared Dudley or Nene, he should be able to put up some numbers there. Brandon Bass at 42, and that just feels just a smidge too high. If Markeith is out, I don't mind using Nene at 4,000. He had 32 in the last game, and he could be a 25 to 26 point sneaky option. And Jared Dudley at 36 would become a tournament play as well. Let's look at the centres in this one. Marcin Gortat at 6,400. He's playing, averaging 35 minutes across his last five games and getting 32 points. It's against the Lakers. He was pretty pissed about the loss they had the other day against the Timberwolves. I think that Gortat is almost a lock for 30 points here, and he would be someone that I could definitely get behind using. Let's have a look now at the DFS picks of the day for Sunday. At point guard, JJ Barea. I've got him at 400 bucks. If he was at 400 bucks, you'd absolutely want to use him. He's actually at 4,000, so ignore that graphic and use him. Ish Smith at 63 and Johnny Wall at 98. Shooting guards, Wes Matthews, 44, Bradley Beal at 55, and Jim Harden at 11,000. The small forwards, Harry Barnes at 43, Otto Porter at 52, and Paulie George at 87. Power forwards, Willie Cauley-Stein, 39, Miles Turner, 57, and Dirk Nowitzki, 8,000. And the centers, Jan Mahinmi, 48, Marcin Gortat, 64, and DeMarcus Cousins, 10,900. We are done today, guys. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Of course, Facebook and Instagram, you can find all those social media sites for the daily contests. Follow Basketball Monster on Twitter, which is at BaskMonster, for up-to-date news with regarding lineups and injuries and all that sort of stuff as it happens. And of course, BasketballMonster.com for all of the great tools that we offer across on that site. Hardwood Paroxysm, a great podcast and article-based network, so make sure you're looking at all the articles and stuff that happens over on Hardwood Paroxysm. We are done. Good luck in your Sunday, whether at DFS or seasonal. Hopefully you win your matchup. Hopefully you win your cash. And hey, some of the listeners of this podcast have gone pretty well. Some to the, at least one listener went to the FanDuel finals the other day and had not a great night, but still walked away with a pretty sizable chunk of money, and a lot of other people tweeting at me that they're winning some pretty big bucks at the moment. So congratulations to all you guys. Good luck in your matchups. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.